Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, A.C. Felder, and today the topic is Kabbalah. And to talk with me about this topic, I have Marsha Montenegro. Let me tell you about Marsha. Marsha is president of Christian Answers for the New Age. She is the author of Spellbound, The Paranormal Seduction of Today's Kids. She is working on a Master's of Arts in Religion at Southern Evangelical Seminary. And she has spoken at conferences all over the country. Welcome to the show, Marsha.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on, Harold.
Yes. Tell us about your ministry.
Well, my ministry is Christian Answers for the New Age, and it has two goals. One is to educate Christians about the New Age and the occult, and the other part of it is to reach people in the New Age and the occult. So I deal with both Christians and non-Christians as a resource, mainly for the Christians, and then also dialoguing with and reaching out to the non-believers.
Okay, great, great. So I guess we'll get right into it. What is Kabbalah?
Well, Kabbalah is a term, comes from the Hebrew root KBL. Of course, that's the English alphabet there, which means to receive. I don't know how to say it in Hebrew, but it's to receive. And the Kabbalah, there are the claims for it, and then there is what is probably the reality of it. So it's really like dealing with two layers here. The claims are that the Kabbalah are writings and teachings that go way, way, way back, but for several centuries were underground, and they were discovered back in the Middle Ages, the early Middle Ages. And so the claim is that these are really very old teachings based on the Torah, and the belief is that the Torah has hidden meaning in it. So you don't just take it for what it says. You have to be taught about the underlying hidden meanings in it. Then there is the other view, which is the Kabbalah really came about in the Middle Ages, and the writings were not copied from ancient sources, but actually were originally written then, although claims were made they were ancient, because there is no evidence that these writings and teachings really are ancient. So the evidence is more that they're claimed to be old, but they really came about through several people in the Middle Ages, Jewish philosophers and rabbis who taught this. And it was always a secretive teaching. Actually, they say in Jewish Talmudic teachings, the secrets of the Kabbalah are to be, quote, carefully controlled, unquote. But what happened in the 20th century is that some rabbis started writing and teaching about the Kabbalah openly, so it was no longer controlled and just for a certain population. And that kind of blew the whole lid off of it. So Kabbalah wasn't really something that most people knew about or thought about, because they didn't even know what it was till these people started popularizing it in the 20th century.
Why keep it a secret?
Well, because in Orthodox Judaism, the idea is that these teachings are for, number one, Jewish married men who have to be at least 40 years old and who have already studied the Torah in a traditional Jewish way. So they already have to know the Torah, be familiar with it, and they have to be a Jewish man. And the teachings are for them only. And usually, they would be taught by a rabbi, a one-on-one thing. I think the idea is that these teachings are something not everyone can understand. They aren't for everybody. They're esoteric, and therefore you don't just spread them around to everybody, because people who don't know the Torah and people who aren't Jewish, it doesn't apply to them, and people who don't know the Torah can't appreciate it. So I'm guessing a little bit as to why it should be secret, but this is based on, you know, what I've read about it. I do know it was definitely only for Jewish married men over the age of 40, and so the fact that some of the teachings have been made more available bothers a lot of the Orthodox Jewish rabbis.
So Orthodox Jewish rabbis actually consider these teachings to be legitimate?
Yes, they do. And I don't think all Orthodox Jewish rabbis know or teach the Kabbalah. I just think some of them do. And I have to make a disclaimer here. I am not an expert on the way the Orthodox Jewish rabbis teach the Kabbalah. For one, I'm not Jewish, and for another, I'm a woman. So I'm not privy to the way they do it. I had to read a little bit about this controversy with the way the Orthodox Jewish rabbis traditionally wanted the Kabbalah taught versus the way it's being, you know, kind of promoted by these other people and the disagreements there. So I know about that. Now, how the Orthodox Jewish rabbis actually see things, I don't know, but yes, they do consider the Kabbalah legitimate, absolutely. Their main beef seems to be that these other people have made it open to everybody, number one, and number two, have mixed it in with other ideas that basically I would call New Age. So they have a problem with that, and they aren't happy about these teachings being out there. But yeah, it is legitimate with Orthodox Jewish rabbis.
Okay, so it's not a religion or a cult of his own. It's just teachings within Judaism.
Yes, originally and traditionally. The thing is, when these other people started making the teachings more open and writing about them, for example, there's Rabbi David Cooper, who wrote a book called God is a Verb, which I think came out around 1990. I actually read the book. And he wrote in the beginning of that book that he felt the world was at a point where it was time for the teachings of the Kabbalah to be made available to more people. He did not think that it should continue to be just for the married Jewish men, because he felt that mankind had reached a point where these teachings would be helpful, that because of things going on in our world and the crisis that we always seem to be in with war and conflicts and et cetera. And he also has sort of, it seems, a New Age kind of a belief about how man's consciousness is more ready for this kind of teaching. So he tried to justify, or I guess thought he justified, making these teachings available, but, you know, he puts in a lot of things that would appeal to New Agers, and so a lot of New Age people got drawn to the Kabbalah, and so you have over here, traditionally, the Orthodox Jewish rabbis and the Jewish men who are studying the Kabbalah, and then over here, you've got the New Agers and other people getting into the Kabbalah because of its mystical New Agey type teachings, and some of the teachers in that with those people are maybe watering down some of the Kabbalah, or perhaps adding some things in there that aren't necessarily there. It's real hard to say, because you would have to know what the Orthodox Jewish rabbis teach in order to say that. That was one of my problems when I was researching this, was I couldn't say, well, they really are adding things in, because it is true that the Kabbalah does teach, you know, reincarnation and does address things like astrology. But to what extent and how they do it, only Orthodox Jewish rabbis who do it know, and they probably won't say. So you've got this kind of confusion within a confusion. Because the whole thing is confusing anyway, and then you've got all this controversy and more confusion. I found this a very, very difficult topic to research and read about and try to write it in such a way that it would make sense, because there's so many different aspects to it. Now, I actually knew about the Kabbalah back in the 80s when I was an astrologer and I was teaching astrology at an organization in Atlanta, Georgia. At that organization, where they were teaching things like tarot cards, past life regression, you know, palm reading, those kind of topics, and New Age topics, they did have an ongoing Kabbalah class that they were teaching. I did not take it, but a lot of my astrology students were in the Kabbalah class, and when I was talking about things in the astrology class, sometimes these students would say, oh, yeah, we learned about that in Kabbalah. And they discussed that in Kabbalah. So they were discussing some aspects of astrology in the Kabbalah class. And this was back in the 80s. This is before Rabbi Cooper, you know, wrote his book, and before a lot of the movie stars and other celebrities that we see, like Demi Moore and Madonna, got into Kabbalah. It was still relatively unknown to the larger population at that time, and yet in this little organization down in Atlanta, it was being taught. So it's always been recognized in a way by people on the kind of occult New Age side of things as, in their eyes, a valid teaching, because it touches on these esoteric topics like reincarnation and astrology.
So, Marcia, do we know what some of those teachings are from the Orthodox side as well as from some of the more New Age side?
Well, I mean, what we know is, of course, what you can find out when you research it. It is based on the idea of the Torah being having hidden meanings. It's supposed to have four levels, and the deepest level is one that you have to be taught. What that is, you can't figure it out on your own. The books, it's called the Zohar, is the body of teaching for the Kabbalah, Zohar, which means the Book of Radiance or the Book of Splendor. And it's very, very long, so it's broken up into many volumes. And it recounts conversations between legendary rabbis, along with commentaries on the hidden meanings of the Torah. So you've got these conversations going on with these rabbis from the past, and then you have commentaries on the meaning of certain passages from the Torah. And so that's the Zohar, that's the sacred text of the Kabbalah. And for a long time, it was just in Hebrew, and it only, as I understand it, only got translated into English not all that long ago. I think starting somewhere in the, maybe even the 1990s, possibly the 1980s. There's a Kabbalah scholar named Daniel Matt, M-A-T-T, who has been in the process of translating them into English. And then also there's some other people translating it. I need to mention, just to probably add more mud to the water here.
Okay.
One of the ways the teachings of the Kabbalah are being taught to a large number of people outside of the Jewish Orthodox tradition is through something called the Kabbalah Center. And this is an organization that has offices in several places. They have a big office in Los Angeles, a big headquarters. They have a headquarters in New York City, and they have some headquarters overseas. And this was run, it's run by the Berg family. And they have the Berg family, a father and his sons, although I understand now the father has been ill for a while. But the sons were teaching in these Kabbalah centers and writing books about the Kabbalah. And it is this organization, the Kabbalah Center, which attracted the celebrities, possibly because they had an office or a headquarters in Los Angeles. I'm not sure. But that, of course, is where most of the celebrities hang out, is at the headquarters in Los Angeles. But It's not just celebrities who go to the Kabbalah Center. You know, most people who go are not celebrities, but it became kind of known because of these celebrities who were going there. Probably Madonna is one of the most well-known because she was very vocal about her beliefs in the Kabbalah and her dedication to it. So she kind of made it popular, you know, to most people. At least they would say, oh, yeah, I've heard about that, you know, because I know Madonna's into it. So that kind of brought it more into the public arena. And you have other celebrities interested. But then you have, you know, just regular people going to the Kabbalah Center in these different cities and taking, you know, taking classes and learning the Kabbalah teachings. And let's see, a couple of other things that you learn in it. One of the important things about the belief in the Kabbalah is that each Hebrew letter is assigned a numerical value. So words become transmitters of secret meanings, and this is a system called Gematria, G-E-M-A-T-R-I-A, and that you use this to decode the Torah. So you turn it into this kind of coded, well, they do believe it's a coded set of writings, and you use Gematria to decipher it. And I mentioned earlier the Torah is studied on four levels. They believe there's four levels of meaning, and they use the acronym PRDS, which stands for Pardes, which means an orchard or garden. And the P is stands for a Hebrew word, and I don't know how to pronounce Hebrew, but I'm just going to say it phonetically, Peshat, which represents the literal level. R is for Remez, which means the metaphors, allegories, and parables of the text. The D is Drosh, which means using additional material to interpret the text. And S is Samik, the secret, this is a quote, the secret hidden meanings that offer insights into the structure of the universe. And that deepest level can only be grasped after a lot of study. And they believe that the Torah is a coded book that contains the wisdom of creation. And in fact, they believe that God created the universe using the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. So there is a mystical force assigned to the Hebrew letters themselves. They believe each Hebrew letter has a power. And one of the things that's taught, at least at the Kabbalah Center, is that if you have a particular problem, you can scan the letters, the Hebrew letters of certain words, without even if you don't know Hebrew, you can just scan the letters with your eyes, and doing that will have an effect on you. Will help heal you if you're sick. It will help you if you're depressed. You know, it will help you if you're worried or whatever the problem is. So there's this mystical power in the letters. Now, of course, I would consider this occultic.
Yeah.
You know, this is part of a belief you would find in the world of the occult, believing that there is a power in objects and a power in sounds. Or maybe pictures. In this case, the letters would almost be like pictures, especially if you don't know how to read Hebrew. So you'd just be looking at, you know, a formation, a certain letter that doesn't mean anything to you rationally, but it has a power because they believe in this mystical power. So this is one of the things that is taught. That gives you an example of the kind of teachings you find in the Kabbalah. They also believe that there's something called the Book of Formation, which was actually revealed by God to Abraham around 2000 BC. And so they think God revealed how he created the universe to Abraham at that time in this Book of Formation. So they think it originally goes back to Abraham. So that's another belief that they have. They also believe that the Ten Commandments, you know, the good old Ten Commandments, you know, Charlton Heston and
right,
the Ten
right.
Commandments, they don't believe these were really commandments, but a code for something called the Sephiro, S-E-F-I-R-O-T. The Sephiro are emanations or aspects of God's nature. And this is another big, huge central teaching of the Kabbalah is something called the Tree of Life. And the Tree of Life is literally kind of looks like a tree, except it's upside down. The roots are coming from heaven, and then the top of the tree goes down to earth. And it has 10 points on it. These points are called the Sephiro. And they each have a name, and they each have a meaning. And this Tree of Life illustrates God's nature, and it also represents the journey of man getting back to God. Because the overarching idea of all of this is that man has to get back to God and has to get back to the garden. Man has to restore the Garden of Eden. And so the way you do this is through the Tree of Life. It represents the journey as well as representing God. And some of the points are things we would ascribe to God, such as wisdom and mercy. You know, those are two of the points. And certainly as Christians, we would say, yes, God is wisdom. You know, God is merciful. But it's much more than that. For example, one side is male and one side is female. And then there's three points in the middle that connect those two sides. And that is because the male and female side have to be balanced.
Mm.
So here again, you have a very occult kind of picture of God. And God is, even though God's referred to and they read the Torah, God is really much more impersonal than personal. And he's very distant and very remote. And so the Kabbalah sort of becomes, it's not really like Judaism. It's like an occult, to me, I would describe it as an occult counterfeit of Judaism.
Okay.
That's how I would describe it.
Now, one of the things I like to do is try to show, because, you know, we all hear that all beliefs are the same, and to try to show how they differ, how beliefs do differ, and how Christianity is in a category of its own. So the Kabbalah, what does it teach as far as the nature of man and sin and salvation and all that type of good stuff?
Yeah, and there again you get into some complications because it's not real clear. It definitely, I think, sin is minimized in what I read. And the explanation for what happened, there are different explanations for what happened in the garden with Adam and Eve as to, you know, what was the problem there. And so you have different theories. You know, one of them was that they ate the fruit twice, the forbidden fruit twice, and then when the second time they did that, it divorced one of the sephiros, the male sephiro from the female sephiro of God, and that created a division in God. There's another theory I read about that Eve had relations with the serpent.
Mm.
I've also read an account where Adam and Eve were vessels to receive light from God, so they could be vessels of light, but they couldn't hold all that light because they didn't have anyone to share it with, so they broke. Their vessels broke. Mm. And in fact, this is an idea in the Kabbalah that we are broken vessels. And, you know, we need to repair our vessels so that we can hold light. And once we can repair our vessels and hold light, we can share light. So it's very much based on works, the idea, you know, if you even have a concept of salvation. And I'm not sure they would even necessarily use that word. They certainly wouldn't use it the way a Christian would use it. But the idea is that getting back to God and restoring the garden is something that is up to man, and man has to repair his vessel. And in fact, there's a word for it called tikkun, which means healing. And so that's a big thing. And I even heard Madonna talking on a talk show, and she was saying You know, we have to fix ourselves. We have to, you know, repair ourselves. And this is the idea. This is one of the big ideas that you hear.
And that is one of the reasons why I do like to do shows on different beliefs, because it becomes clear after you listen to enough of my shows is that there are really just two different beliefs. There is the belief that we can fix ourselves, as in the Kabbalah, as in every other religion, that, you know, man can do it himself. And then there's the view of Christianity where you can't do it yourself, that Jesus did it for you. He had to do it for you because you couldn't do it. So these beliefs are completely incompatible.
Right, right. And even the concept of God in Kabbalah is very different from even the Old Testament depiction of God, because, in fact, they call God Ein Sof, which means endlessness. And Ein Sof is considered remote and unknowable, and that's why you have to have the Tree of Life, because the Tree of Life tells us about God, but the Tree of Life is more abstract. It's like abstract principles rather than personal qualities. And then you have to have the male and female sides balanced. So there's a big difference just in the concept of God in Kabbalah versus God in just even the Old Testament. You know, never mind the New Testament. You've just got a whole different God there. And God, and the God of Kabbalah also is incomplete. He needs man in order to complete his plan. Now, that's according to Kabbalah scholar Daniel Matt. So you've got an incomplete God, which, of course, doesn't make sense biblically, because God is, of course, complete because he's perfect. So he doesn't, and he doesn't need man either.
Right.
So there's another... You know, there's another difference, another difference, of course, is the way you view the Torah. They view it as a code with hidden meanings rather than just taking the text for what it says.
And you also mentioned that they believe in reincarnation.
That is taught at the Kabbalah Center, and it's in Rabbi Cooper's book. That is a part of it. I don't think it's as emphasized maybe as it is in a lot of New Age things, but it's definitely in there. And so there's the reincarnation. I believe some of the other things like astrology and everything are thrown in there too. I did not write too much about that when I wrote my article, because really there's two ways to approach this. One is, probably more than two, but two major ways would be to look at Kabbalah versus a traditional understanding of Judaism and the Old Testament and biblical Christianity, and then you can also go at it by looking at how the Kabbalah is used in a more esoteric occult fashion, because a lot of occultists use the Kabbalah in ritual magic. And that's a whole other area that I did not even address.
Yeah, could you explain it a little bit?
Well, the people involved in esoteric, New Age, and occult beliefs believe the Kabbalah is like a kind of key to hidden wisdom and hidden meanings that can help you. And they will use, for example, the Tree of Life. They might meditate on each of the Sephiroth, or I think Sephiroth is the singular, Sephiroth is plural. And so you meditate on each Sephiroth, and, you know, and I've even seen books on it where they tell you what you should meditate on, and that supposedly helps raise your consciousness. In ritual magic, a lot of the teachings of the Kabbalah, the Kabbalah is very Gnostic. It's very Gnostic in nature.
Now, explain what you mean by Gnostic.
Okay. Gnostic would be going back to Gnosticism, which started around the time when Christianity was starting in the first century, is a belief that there are secret teachings, and in order to gain true understanding of what the truth is and who you are, you have to have these secret teachings. And Gnosticism was the idea that we all come from God, and we all were spirits from God, and we're trapped in bodies, and we have to go back to God. We have to realize we're trapped in bodies, and then we study these secret teachings so that we learn how to get away from our bodies and away from this world and go back to God. And the Gnostics who were basically counterfeiting Christianity, the so-called Christian Gnostics, were teaching that Jesus was giving secret teachings to his disciples. And that's what the Gnostic Gospels were about, which were not written until the second century. But the Gnostic Gospels were teaching that Jesus had these secret teachings. So the Gnostic idea always has this idea there are these secret teachings, hidden teachings that you have to be initiated into or you have to be taught. And it's always what you're learning is always something that is not apparent. It's not something you would just naturally come across or you would naturally think of, you know, such as the Tree of Life and these 10 points and God having a male side and a female side and all of these things that it teaches. You would never just naturally think that, and you certainly wouldn't come across it in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's this body of secret teachings. And I think the fact that God is so remote and you can't know him, I think that's also a part of Gnosticism, because the Gnostics taught that too. God was so remote, he had to have these emanations and these intermediaries between him and man for man to know God, because God was too remote for man to know directly. And that's another Gnostic thing, and that's also part of the Kabbalah.
Now, do we have any datings for any of these scriptures that they're using?
I'm horrible at remembering dates. It's the Middle Ages, like there was a Spanish guy named Moses de Leon in the 13th century, and he supposedly uncovered the Zohar manuscripts in Aramaic. Okay, now that's what he claimed. He claimed he had uncovered these Aramaic manuscripts, which became the Zohar. And he said he copied them, and, you know, so he found them, and then he copied them. But, of course, I don't think there's any evidence that he found anything, and there's no evidence of those ancient things. So it's really believed by a lot of people that Moses de Leon wrote some of the text, perhaps with other Kabbalists. Parts of the Zohar may have been transmitted through automatic writing. And automatic writing is where you let some other force or being, supernatural being, direct your writing. So you're not thinking about what you're writing. You're not trying to write anything. You let something take over your hand and your mind, and you write it out. I mean, this is something that's practiced today. But actually, Kabbalists who meditated on the divine name of God would go into trances and then write down words as their hands were guided. So they practiced automatic writing. And so some of the texts of the Zohar may be from that. And then later, after that initial set of writings, in the 16th century, there was a rabbi named Isaac Luria, and he wrote commentaries on the Zohar. And Luria's commentaries are very, very highly respected by followers of Kabbalah. And in fact, Luria is known as the Ari, A-R-I, which means the Holy Lion. And his teaching sort of became the definitive school of Kabbalistic thought. That's a quote from someone. So Luria is very highly respected, and his commentaries are studied. Some people might have heard, some of the audience might have heard of Dr. John Dee, who was the astrologer for Queen Elizabeth I. John Dee was a student of the Kabbalah.
Okay.
As was Sir Isaac Newton.
Oh, Sir Isaac Newton as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So I'm not surprised John Dee was, because John Dee is also one of the people who formulated some ritual magic. And I think he used a lot of the Kabbalah. Some of the Kabbalah used in ritual magic is calling on angels and calling on divine beings. in their rituals. Now, I'm not saying that was when these Jewish rabbis in the Middle Ages were doing the Kabbalah. I don't think that's what they had in mind. But this is something that came about later by people in the occult, like John Dee, who used it. They saw it as a tool in their practices, and they used it for that. And that it's still being used that way by occultists today.
What I want people to take away is that when they hear about the Kabbalah, they need to realize that it has an occultic background, because that thing you were talking about before, as far as the automatic writing, I think you and I agree that's demonic.
When you let
yourself go and open yourself up to something to give you messages, you're opening yourself up to demonic influences.
Yes, and it definitely would not be from God.
Right.
It would be a demonic influence, and so we know that's not a truth from God.
And not only that, we see the messages that is propagated. The message that, you know, you can be good enough on your own. That God is insufficient, even in His own character. All of these things are very anti-biblical. They're very anti-Christian, and we need to realize that. To be aware of that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I think a lot of times, sometimes people tend to almost dismiss something like the Kabbalah, and they think, oh, it's so out there and it's so flaky, you know, only a few people are really going to believe this, you know, I'm not worried about that. But actually, the fact that it's so complex and has all of these so-called secret teachings and everything is very appealing to a lot of people, and it makes it interesting. And it gives you something, you know, here's something to study, here's something I can do, I can meditate on these Hebrew letters when I'm, you know, worried or sick or whatever. I can help myself, I can repair my vessel and become a vessel of light. And all of these teachings in the Kabbalah take you away from the true God, and they certainly and definitely take you away from knowing Jesus Christ. So
yeah.
It's a deception. It's a huge deception. And while you may not run into a lot of mainstream people who are getting into the Kabbalah, there are quite a few people involved in it. And then it tends to influence other areas like the New Age, you know. So it's, you know, all of these false teachings out there are all kind of connected. And they work together, you know, to deceive a lot of people. And we should never minimize a teaching that is directly attacking, you know, the truth of God.
Now, how popular is this belief?
The Kabbalah?
These teachings, yes.
Well, outside of Orthodox Judaism, I don't know. I think that it's been fairly popular because the books that were being written were selling really well. Rabbi Cooper's book, God is a Verb, that I mentioned earlier, that was on a bestseller list for a real long time. Some of the books by the Berg family have been very good sellers. So I don't think that it's a mainstream thing, but I think that it has done very well, and that there are a lot of people who might sort of dabble in it, like they might be kind of into the New Age, and then they hear about this Kabbalah from somewhere, and they think, oh, you know, I think I want to read one of those books about Kabbalah, and you know, they pick up one of these books and they read it, and then they're influenced by it. So they may not be going to the Kabbalah Center, and they may not officially call themselves a follower of Kabbalah, but they may be influenced by the ideas coming from it in some of these books.
Yeah, and Marcia, in the beginning of the show, you mentioned that there were two, I guess, tracks. There was the Orthodox Jewish tract, and then somehow there was a splinter off of this whole, like, New Age track.
Right.
So some of the ideas we've talked about recently, as far as reincarnation, as far as duality of God, as far as the whole Adam and Eve thing and the light thing, are these things that are being taught by the Orthodox Jews, or is this just the New Age group that's teaching this type of stuff?
Well, I don't know. That's why I said at the beginning, I don't know, you know, what the Orthodox Jews teach, because there's no way to know that.
Yeah.
And if I was an Orthodox rabbi, I could tell you. Yeah. But I'm not.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, yeah, they do teach that, especially the part about the vessels of light, because I read that in some of Daniel Matt's stuff. Daniel Matt is not part, as far as I can tell, I don't think he's associated at all with the Kabbalah Center or with kind of the New Agey side of it. He's a traditional, you know, rabbi who is an expert on the Kabbalah. And as far as I know, he's highly respected in Orthodox Judaism. So, you know, he writes about some of this stuff about the light and the vessels. There's a little book he wrote where he writes some of the commentaries, like he'll have parts of the Torah, parts of the first five books of the Bible. He'll have a little section there, and then he'll have, you know, a commentary on what it's saying, on what it is. It's, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you can get a good idea there of maybe the more traditional Jewish way of seeing Kabbalah. He has a book called Zohar Annotated and Explained, and he has some other books out there that where you can see that.
So in his commentary, is he trying, or does he make any attempt to reconcile the teachings of Kabbalah with the Torah of the Old Testament, the law, Pentateuch?
Well, that's what he's doing. Now, the Kabbalah is based on the Torah.
Okay.
It is based on the Torah.
Because it seems so incompatible. Yeah, it seems the teachings are so incompatible with what I get from the Old Testament that, you know, it seems like it's a whole different teaching.
Well, that's because you don't believe it's an encrypted book with four levels of meaning.
Okay.
And they do.
Okay.
So when Daniel Matt is writing a commentary on something, you know, just some little passage in you know, let's say in Genesis, and he's writing a commentary on it that you might read and think, well, how did he get that? I don't see that. It's because he's, you know, seeing the so-called hidden meaning thing.
Right.
And this, you know, they really believe that's what it is. They really believe it has this hidden meaning in it, and that God has it set up that way. And so you have to look, you have to get this hidden meaning. You have to be taught this meaning. And of course, if you think that that's what God is doing, it's because you have a different concept of God. And, you know, God is somebody who has these puzzles that you have to try to figure out, and it's secret teachings, and not everybody can understand them or is able to understand them or should understand them. It's only the select few. So it's very elitist in its own way, but all occultism is like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they really sincerely believe that. And I think that there's an appeal there, and that's why, you know, people find it appealing, and so they believe it. And if you're believing something that is giving you some kind of satisfaction in some way, it's satisfying some kind of desire or need on your part, which could, of course, be a bad desire or bad need, but it's satisfying that desire or need, you are going to close your mind to things that show it to be false or that teach against it, and you're going to become even more entrenched in that view. And and the other things you read will only make you think more that that's true. You know, oh yes, now I can see this really is, you know, true. Kabbalah really is the way to study the Torah. You know, this is really from God. So you just get more and more strong in your belief that this is correct. I mean, I think that's the way the human mind and the human heart work when you're deceived.
I agree. Looks like we're coming up on the end of the program. How can people get in contact with you, Marsha?
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, we covered a lot, I think.
We did.
We
did.
Topic here. I hope it wasn't confusing. They can go to my website, www.christiananswersforthenewage.org. It's just the name of my ministry. I know it's kind of long, but it's christiananswersforthenewage.org. And my website, you can just email me from the homepage, or you could send me an email at which is my name, my first initial and my last name, M. Montenegro, at fim.org. M. Montenegro at fim.org. Or go to my website and... Oh, and by the way, I do have an article on the Kabbalah on my website.
I was reading it today before the interview.
And I wrote an article on the Kabbalah for the Christian Research Journal, and the article on my website is very similar. I made some minor changes for it
to go on my website. Actually, I would encourage the listeners to visit your website because there are a number of articles on a number of New Age topics that are very, very informative.
Well, thank you.
Very, very informative.
Yeah, I have a lot of topics I cover, and I'm still not covering them all. It's impossible. There's so much out there, you know.
I know. Well, Marcia, I really, really appreciate you being on the show, talking with me about the Kabbalah. Once again, Marcia Montenegro. And that will end this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.
The preceding show has been sponsored by Giving an Answer with your host, H.C. Felder. So you can hear this broadcast as well as other episodes by visiting us online at givinganswer.org. You can also order a CD or a DVD of the studio recording by calling me at 704-248-7840. And remember, this show will only stay on the air if people continue to help us buy airtime. So I encourage you to consider making a tax-deductible financial donation to this ministry. That phone number again is 704-248-7840. And be sure to join me again next time on Giving an Answer.